Hello and welcome back to Easy Being Green, Lessons in Sustainable Business with me, your host, Charlie. Is offsetting a dirty word? In today's conversation with Mark Stringer, or Strings as he's better known, from Scoot Eco, we explore and dissect some of the criticisms about the way some businesses use offsetting without authentic and genuine intent to do good. Mark offers his expert advice on how to best include offsetting as part of your impact strategy to address your business's carbon footprint, but in a way that has genuine and authentic intent. Scoot Eco, a top 5% B Corp, is a new climate platform that enables businesses to take responsibility for their carbon footprint by helping them to identify, avoid, and offset CO2 on their journey to net zero. Mark's own journey really resonated with me, as we have a few spooky similarities in our backgrounds. For example, we both lived and worked in Australia. Both at one point, we worked with a very famous energy drink company, and we are both marketeers who are now trying to use our evil marketing skills to drive positive change. This was another enjoyable and informative conversation for me, and I hope it is for you too. Mark, welcome to the Easy Being Green podcast. How are you today?
I'm very, very well. The sun is shining and I'm very happy. And I've been out for a run, so I'm feeling quite virtuous.
Oh, you've started your Friday very well. Well done, you. And I can see, if you watch the this recording on YouTube, you'll be able to see that Mark is sat in what looks like the Swiss Alps.
Yeah, the brilliance of virtual backgrounds. If only I was in the Swiss Alps. But I'm in Cheshire today, so, and it is beautiful, so I can't complain too much.
Oh, lovely. Lucky you getting some sun. It's very grey and misty down here in the southwest of England. Hopefully the sunshine comes our way later. So you are the CMO at Scoot. So I want to start off today by hearing your story. How did Scoot come about? What is it? And what is the challenge or challenges that you are addressing with Scoot?
I feel like that question makes me want to lie on a sofa and in a dark room and get some therapy. What is my story? I'm a marketer by trade, and I've spent a very long time now making people buy things they don't want or need. Mm-hmm. Probably I'm quite good at it. And, you know, I cut my teeth at Disney as an undergraduate, when I graduated, and I fell into marketing. I don't think anyone sort of says, you really should be a marketeer. I can talk for hours about the inefficiencies and crapness of schools. But anyway, I cut my teeth at Disney. I was, I fell in love with this idea of fast marketing, building brands, launching products, and to be honest, doing crazy things that people paid me to do. It's sort of realizing that actually work didn't need to feel like work. And I've been very, very fortunate that to find a passion in that that has meant that I've never felt like work. So, from Disney, entertainment, fast marketing, went agency side, the dark side, and really got involved in a lot of more what we call below the line marketing. That was my sort of passion and love, events, building brands, stunts. And on that kind of journey, I've worked with every type of brand you can ever think of. And in 2008, I suppose, and maybe this was the first scratch, but the Scoot or the itch. And, you feel like you're on this treadmill. Mm-hmm. And probably people listening to this feel that a lot. What's the point? What's my reason for being? There's no win. There's no finish line. You go from one to the next to the next. And what I began to sort of think was, is this it? Is this what I really want to do? Mm-hmm. And I was really fortunate in 2008 that there was this small business that gave people wings, that sold really brilliant energy drinks in a can, and they put their arm around me, and I was working with them at the time, and they said, look, come and hang with us, and kind of let's see where we go and what we do. And I ended up creating an agency out of Red Bull and built a business from 2008 working with the likes of Lego and Snap and Three and every big brand you could ever think of, Nando's. And that group is still going. I've moved upstairs to a chairman's role. Mm-hmm. But that kind of love and passion of brand building is what sort of I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I began to become not disillusioned with my own business, but but where do old agency people go to die?
Yes.
Where are they? Where are they all? You know, it's that sense of a young person's game in a way. And I didn't want to sell the agency group, and wasn't too sure what I was going to do or where I was going to go. And maybe I was looking, and I really believe in serendipity. If you ask the universe, it does deliver. Mm. But you kind of have to be open to it. Mm. And Greg Gormley, who I helped launch one of his amazing startups called Bink, reconnected with me and said, I've got this crazy idea around social mobility and the crumbling infrastructure of the UK. How do young people get around? Surely there's something that we can do around carpooling or something. And that was the initial iteration of Scoot. Okay. And we kept talking. We knew we could work together. And he said to me, hey, do you fancy coming in as a co-founder? And let's see where we go with this. And that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of my journey from agency side into Scoot and creating the business that we've got today.
Fantastic. What a great journey. And we hadn't even spoken about this, but I used to be in an agency that worked with Red Bull. So how funny how worlds collide in Australia. There you go. Small world. So what is Scoot? What do you do at Scoot? What challenges are you addressing with the business?
So the fundamentals of Scoot, we're a climate platform, and you go, well, what does that mean? You know, so you sort of wrap it up words. The simplicity is we help communities, businesses, and individuals take more responsibility for their carbon emissions. And we look at it, as you know, that there are three kind of main things that we all need to think about. Do we understand our carbon footprint? So identify. What are we doing to avoid and reduce our carbon footprint? And then what's left, I'm going to say it, you have to offset or counter or mitigate. And we really focus on those three areas for businesses. Mm-hmm. So how do you take more responsibility of your carbon emissions? And then how do you do something with them?
Yeah. Fantastic. So you mentioned the way you said about offsetting just there. Mm-hmm. Kind of alluded to this conversation that tends to be happening a little bit recently about some big brands have been using offsetting programs either incorrectly or they've not been really transparent about what that actually means or if there's actually a positive impact. And for some brands, especially some of the bigger organizations out there, it seems to be a bit of a tick box to offset. It's like, well, we offset, so you know, that makes us carbon neutral, or that's the way we're going to be carbon neutral. And it can feel a little bit greenwashy. So it was interesting there that you said, you know, there's those three kind of pillars that you look at. So can you firstly just imagine that people listening to this have absolutely no idea what carbon offsetting is? What is it? And secondly, how can businesses use carbon offsetting programs as part of that system that you mentioned there for a good purpose?
So if we go back to if you know your carbon footprint, so let's say the average person in the UK as an individual is 9 tons of carbon they're emitting. And put that into perspective, 1 ton is a 10 meter sphere or a small hot air balloon. So, and in business, most people in business will incur about 2 tons. So if you're, you know, we're sat here and we're working, then I have a 20 meter hot air balloon above my head that I have created. And if it was black smoke, you'd see it. And if it was sewage, you'd smell it. But because it's clear, we don't see it, and therefore we kind of ignore it. In understanding that it's there and above my head, I can't reduce it wholly. Mm. Virtually impossible. I have to stop breathing. Like everything we do has a carbon output. Mm. Walking has a carbon output. We'll go back to school, the simplicity of it. You know, I breathe out carbon. I need trees. It's really, really basic.
Yeah.
That we kind of muddy into complexity. Mm-hmm. The simplicity is there is a quantity of carbon, CO2, carbon dioxide, that we are breathing out, and we have to remove that carbon because that's what's causing climate change in the main. So if it's there, I have to try and mitigate it. I have to try and counter it somehow. And offsetting is a way to do that. So I know that I have this ton above my head. If I plant 170 trees in a year, that tree will take the CO2, release back oxygen, and store the carbon in the roots. I have therefore offset one ton above my head by planting trees. So offsetting is absolutely brilliant when done with the right partners, done with transparency, but done with the right intent. And I think it's Greenpeace that talks about, you know, greenwashing is about intent. Mm. I don't care about my two tons, so I'm just going to plant 340 trees. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to fund a carbon project like cookstoves in, you know, Africa. I don't really care.
Mm.
That's the fundamentals. Hence the reason why we talk about those three elements is if you know your carbon footprint, if you then try and avoid it, reduce it, think about it, and what's left, you offset. It feels really powerful. It feels like we should celebrate the fact that I knew that my hotel stay was 20 kilos.
Mm.
Therefore, but actually what I decided to do was not have steak at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
What I decided to do was actually not drive to the venue.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going on holiday and I know I'm flying. We're not saying don't fly.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying that if you're incredibly wealthy and you turn left on a plane to go to JFK and back, that's 6.5 tons of carbon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now it's up to you whether you make that choice, but the responsibility you have is yours. Mm-hmm. And you have the solutions today with the likes of Scoot to do something now, to absolutely not say it's not my responsibility, to go and plant some trees, to try and rebuild communities, to try and do good.
I really love the way that you created a visual for carbon emissions, because I think that's the part that is so hard to communicate when you're talking about carbon emissions. And that's why it's I think it doesn't get the attention it deserves, and perhaps why governments don't take it as seriously as something tangible. Like we talk about a lot about, you know, the response to COVID-19 was very quick and everybody adjusted really quickly. But we've known about the climate crisis for a very, very, very long time. And at the moment, as we're doing this recording, of course, we've got earthquakes happening all over the world. We've got floods in New Zealand, cyclones in New Zealand. Like climate change has been here for a long time. But we're seeing some very extreme effects of it at the moment. But I love that visual thing. If you think about having a balloon over your head, like it actually gives it that almost tangibility of what it actually is. So I really love that. So thank you for sharing that. That's really interesting. Sorry.
And I was just going to say, Charlie, the challenge that we've got is we can't see it, but no way responsible. So, you know, the change in supermarkets of plastic bags and, you know, the signifier of a turtle with a straw in its nose, you know, the very visual elements. And the problem that we have with climate change is the floods, the cyclones in New Zealand and the earthquakes in, you know, Turkey and Syria, the summer that we had, you know, with the heat and the wildfires.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is everyone goes, oh, it's the butterfly effect. It's interconnected with something, but it's not, might be that. It could be a moment in time and, oh, the planet cools up and warms down. And, you know, that direct dialogue, direct linkage people like to break. And every scientist virtually in this space is telling us we are changing the climate for the worse. And we can argue that it's China, America, petrochemical companies, you know, and I hear it from people I know really well. Yeah, but they're responsible for 30%. Well, you're responsible for 9 tons. What have you done about it? Mm-hmm. Or nothing. But why haven't you then? What? Why? You know, it's very easy to look at other people and say, well, it's a bigger problem for you. But if we all took that mindset on things like, you know, rubbish and fly tipping, and we said, well, that guy at the end of the road, he dropped a load of rubble, but I'm not going to do my bit. So I'm going to leave my rubbish out in front of my house. Society falls apart. And we somehow need to get back to this idea of all taking a little bit more responsibility for what we are creating and the good and the bad that we're creating. We're very good at shouting that, hey, I've done that, but some at the minute, and that's why we talk about, if we can create this nudge effect, lots of small positive changes that can create a huge impact, I can get my head around that. I can feel that I could do something, honest.
And in fact, the most recent IPCC report actually went back to, it had gone away from this whole like individual responsibility, but it went back to saying that actually we can make a difference if we all make small changes. That can have a huge impact. So that was really interesting. I think it's interesting what you mentioned, China there. And I think the whole other conversation about the global north versus the global south, and the impact that our decisions that we have in the wealthier countries around the world have on the global south, where we outsource a lot of our production, you know, a lot of our pollution. We might be really lucky where you're sat here, where you are and where I am, where the sky, the air is clear, and we don't see the impact of carbon emissions. That's the other visualization, isn't it? You don't see the impact that has on people, on the environment, in these places where they're making all of the products that we are then buying. So we do have a direct responsibility of that through our consumerism.
And I think that's we want to blame China because they're the bad company over there. But we are creating that demand. Mm-hmm. You know, we can absolutely lambast, you know, big petrochemical companies for not hitting their targets, and airlines like EasyJet for deciding that they're not going to, you know, offset. And we rightly should hold them to account. But we have the power as individuals, as consumers. You know, I read about it all the time, people really lambasting the petrochemical companies, quite rightly. But how many of those same people are going to Little Waitrose on their way home and stopping at a Shell and a BP M&S and buying their food as well as their petrol? So yes, there might be a necessity to buy petrol, diesel. Mm-hmm. They can't quite switch to EV yet. But we are supporting these businesses. And I think I get it. I get that we should hold them to account at the top. But we have the power to vote by not using those companies, by switching, that will cripple those businesses. And it's really complex. You know, those companies, as I say, need to be held to account. You know, it's no good saying I'm on a 2050 plan and I'm switching to a green aviation fuel, and therefore I'm not going to offset 8 million tons. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, no, I'm sorry, you can't do that. But we have the choice by saying I'm not flying EasyJet, which will cripple them. If we all said I'm not flying EasyJet until you start offsetting all the emissions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's such a huge and complex conversation. It's hard to know where to start, isn't it? Which is a really lovely segue into my next question, which is, for smaller or medium-sized businesses, when they're thinking about actually doing the right thing and offsetting or addressing their carbon emissions, where do you think they should start? Like, what should they look at first?
So I talk to lots of SMEs in this space, and I didn't start as a climate activist, and I'm not a climate activist. I've realized I've got three kids, kind of met, used to make people buy a lot of cigarettes and alcohol as a marketeer. It's like, oh yeah, maybe it's time to do some good. and I think, you know, what the reality is, it comes sometimes into a CFO, it comes into a C-suite, and then it comes down the line that someone in a small business, and it is coming top down. I believed it was going to come bottom up. It's coming top down. People understand they have a responsibility. People want to be B Corp. People are seeing carbon taxes around the world. And it comes from a C-suite, and it might go from a, you know, CEO to a CFO. It kind of then is like, oh, who's going to pick this up? And it then goes to an office manager, or it goes, anyone really into this?
Yeah.
And particularly if you're not in manufacturing, particularly if you're a service-based business where your carbon footprint is about people and, you know, your scope threes, it's really confusing and it's really daunting. And I liken it to the Daily Mail, that on Monday, planting trees is really good, and on Tuesday, it's really bad, and on Wednesday, it's like immoral, and Thursday, it's caused cancer. And that confusion, we at Scoot really, really hate and are trying to solve. So the simple thing is to start, right? And I don't mean that flippantly. Whatever you do today is brilliant. Okay, start there. Celebrate you've started your journey. Mm-hmm. And once that Pandora box is opened, can't get back in. And you start, and you start with a simple carbon calculator, like a Scoot calculator takes you 5 minutes. It's really, really simple. You kind of go, oh, I know my carbon footprint. Great. Then you begin to really explore what things can you avoid and reduce. Think about those and bring some advocates in the business along with you. People who care, you know, a bit like, do you need to press print? Simple things like making sure company meals, 50-50 vegetarian meat, you know, really small things that you can do. And then embrace the offset, right? Embrace the countering with brilliant people like, you know, we work with Eden Reforestation. They are unbelievable. You are rebuilding lives. You are planting trees. You are Mother Nature's best carbon sort of removal and storage is a tree. It is phenomenal. And that's what we talk about, the simplicity of getting on that journey and celebrating you're doing something. And, you know, we're really focusing a lot in hospitality. It's, you know, a huge amount of carbon emissions in that sector. You know, about 15% of all carbon emissions are in hospitality. You know, a two-course meal is 8 kilos.
Gosh. Right?
A tree removes 6, okay, that roughly speaking. So you're looking at it going, hospitality has been on its knees for 3 years with, you know, COVID, Brexit, cost of living crisis. And I talk to people every day and I'm like, we just don't know where to start. And you've just got to start simply with one little thing and then see how it goes.
So the hospitality industry, that's an interesting choice, and is that quite unique to Scoot? I don't know if there's many offsetting programs who are specifically kind of focusing on that, and I had no idea that it had that much of an impact, but I guess now I'm thinking about it, it totally makes sense.
Yeah, so the food sector as a whole is about 30% of carbon emissions. Transport's about 25%. So we started in transport because it was a big gnarly problem that we began to understand, and someone said ESG, we went, what's that? Oh, yeah, ESG. And we're understanding scope 3, and what we found is that because we've spoken about this, I don't really know what sustainability means. I don't understand what 1.5 degrees means. I'm little me in my house, and you want me to control the whole world's temperature 1.5 degrees. I'm kind of just me in a 6 billion, is it 6 billion? Whatever we are.
You're 7 billion now, yeah.
7 billion people, and you want me to control the temperature. I didn't realize I was in a Marvel movie here. But there's kind of, you know, you look at the space of hospitality and you look, so we eat out about 1.5 times a week. I'm not sure what the half is, okay? I'm not sure whether that's, does that mean I've gone to Greg's, or does that mean I've driven into, you know, little Waitrose. But 1.5 times a week we eat out. 25% of all adult income is spent on eating out.
Wow.
It's huge. And go back to, it's about 15%, hospitality is about 15% of all carbon emissions. And no one's really leaning into this space. We just saw it with some of the things that we were doing, that it was an opportunity to really help the hospitality industry. I worked with Nando's for a long time in different guises. And, you know, some of the work that, you know, Greg was talking to different people, were like, there's something here. And what we kind of wanted to do was lean into that space. And what we've looked at, back to who's responsible for the carbon emissions in a restaurant? Well, I am, because I went.
Yep.
I am, because I chose one of the items on the menu. I chose to have a beer, which is about 600 grams of CO2. I chose to have a burger, you know, instead of having tofu. I'm responsible. Well, the restaurant's responsible because it put it on the menu. So for us, it's about that connection of making people aware and then making people understand. So what we've got with a very simple Scoot Eco and Scoot Eco Charge is every single time someone eats in a restaurant with Scoot sort of working, we plant a tree for every person. And a small charge is added to their bill. And that covers the planting of a tree. And therefore, if you have four people having dinner, and let's say they're charged between 30 and 50p, and let's say their bill is likely to be maybe £150, a couple of pounds going on that to plant four trees, kind of go, that's a bit of a no-brainer, win-win situation. And a small restaurant doing 400 covers a week, so a relatively small restaurant, a gastropub, will plant, roughly speaking, 20,000 trees a year. So reforesting an area that is the size of two football pitches, if not bigger, and helping save lives in some of the most devastated countries in the world. So that simplicity of, okay, I'm not going to say don't go and have a burger. I'm not going to say don't go out to a restaurant and have fun. What I am going to say is, did you know that maybe there's another choice to that meal? Did you know that actually you've created the carbon footprint that in a simple way we should try and do something about
it? That's, and it's like, it's exactly the word simple. And it's these, such a tiny change, which isn't foreign, because I've been to many restaurants over the years that have had like a pound added to the bill for a local charity or something like that, and you don't even think about it, because most people hopefully tip anyway, so it's just like a little bit of extra tip or a service charge. So, but, and you don't even have to think about it. It's these small things that are just become habits and part of life that can make such a big difference when we're all doing that. Like you say, there's so many people that go to a restaurant on a weekend. All of them do that. That's brilliant.
And a hotel, you know, a hotel in the UK ranges from about 10. A hotel in the Maldives is about 10 kilos. A hotel in the Maldives, I think, is about 160 kilos of carbon. And, you know, understanding how, you know, using a tree to do good, buddying the tree with, you know, verified carbon credit to ensure that, you know, is one of the things that we're doing. And, you know, the ability to make it really simple for people, the ability to actually, you know, I love, you know, seeing charity donations on bills. But my issue is, where's the money? What are you doing with the money? So what we created is this ability in the restaurant to actually click on a virtual impact forest, to see the number of trees the restaurant's planted, to actually be able to then, we've got coming out, probably by the time this podcast comes out, the ability for the diner to also plant the tree and see it in their own virtual impact forest.
Wow.
So you can actually see, you know, in South America, the trees we're planting, or in Kenya. I used to live in Kenya. So, you know, just around the corner from where I spent many, many happy weeks on holiday, a devastated region in Mombasa, the mangroves have been wiped out. And we planted over 600,000 mangroves. just simply by small in the moment actions that make huge, huge differences to people's lives. And, you know, we're, you know, by the time this comes out, so working with, you know, Dream International across, you know, amazing restaurants like Amazonica and Koya, you know, really beautiful, luxurious restaurant where, you know, actually they want to really take responsibility for what they're doing through to small pubs like the Architect in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And then we've got rolling out through an amazing partner, Oracle, to have an app extension whereby reaching 350,000 venues, they can automatically integrate Scoot into what they're already doing. And the model that we've created for people is for the restaurants, there's no upfront cost, there's no fees, really transparent. And actually either the diner can pick up the cost or the restaurant can halve the cost or pick up the cost. But it's micro payments to create macro change.
Micro payments for macro change. That's fantastic.
I so just mentioned made that up. I really like it. Can we just
write it down quick?
Yeah, just trademark that.
TM. You mentioned the mangroves there, and you've been talking a little bit about like the effect of what Scoot does and the carbon offsetting, the planting trees on people in devastated areas. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so what's the reason, you know, we do work on, you know, carbon projects and work with the likes of Gold Standard and, you know, helping a lot of devastated regions like switch to cook stoves and et cetera, et cetera. But go back to the tree planting and the devastation. So there's currently situations where we need to protect the forest. We need to kind of 10 billion trees get chopped down a year. An area the size of Portugal is devastated every year for tree deforestation. So net, I think we plant about 4 billion. So we're short of about 6 billion trees every year that are going. And not only does the deforestation in an area kind of destroy the planet, it destroys the community. So if you think of areas where the mangroves are brilliant for helping the fish and, you know, blue carbon below the water, the fish stocks, the prawns, et cetera, et cetera. Mangroves are phenomenal for firewood, but also building materials. Like most people think of mangroves as these little things that sit in water.
Yeah.
We plant 5 different types in Mombasa. And once they're gone, the ecosystem begins to fall apart, and that's both the animal ecosystem and the birds and the fish, but also the ecosystem of the community that can no longer fish in the area, have the firewood, and there's no community. So those villages begin to disperse. You know, the classic sort of where do you go, or follow the lights, etc. And what we do is actually enable that community to have ongoing income in a protected site. So we've been able to employ about 7,000 work days for a community that has gainful employment, you know, through continuous periods that enables people to fund, you know, not having to send their children off to work straight away by enabling them to go to school, et cetera, et cetera. And whether that's, you know, tree planting in Africa or tree planting in other areas in Africa or South America and Amazon, every one of those regions that we're working in is more than just restoring a forest. It's restoring a community. It's, you know, and Eden talk about it, and they, you know, they've planted 1 billion trees now. They're doing about 30 million a month. They are saving lives. Mm. And I think that's the bit emotionally, you know, you might not think you're saving the planet. You might not think, but you know what? Planting a tree does save a life. And that's that bit that I think is lovely to see. And the fact that we get photographs and see how actually the area has come alive and that people want to protect that area because they kind of feel invested in it.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Oh gosh, I love that. So it's made me kind of take a bit of a deep breath, because it's, I think that sometimes in the whole like sustainability, what does that mean? But in that world, I think the P that gets forgotten is often people. And we like, especially when it comes to like planting trees, what happens then to the communities around where those trees have been planted. So yeah, it's awesome to hear that that's something you're addressing and doing good. So a couple more questions. I'd like to come back to you, please, Mark. Let's get back on that therapy couch. Now that you've moved into this whole new world, and away from the evil marketing, which I was
I'm now chairperson or chairman
In this brand new world. What is it that drives you now? Is it what you were just talking about, like that impact that you're making on for people? What is it that gets you out of bed in the morning to keep going with Scoop?
I mean, I love startups. I love new. I get bored easily. I'm like this stupid sort of Duracell bunny. I don't run out of energy because I'm always focused on, you know, the things that I'm passionate about that don't feel like a job. So I don't have a problem working stupid hours because it kind of keeps me excited. And I have a thirst for knowledge. I like new. I like learning. I like, you know, we're a B Corp, top 5% B Corp, and that people, planet, profit intersection kind of is cerebral. You know, what are the things that we can do to make a difference? And being a marketeer and having worked with virtually every big brand you can ever think of, you kind of realize someone has to do the Oscars. Someone has to win the Oscars. Someone has to make the difference. And why can't it be you? And I think that crazy ambition that, you know, we can make a difference in a small way or a big way is what drives me to know that, yeah, you know, you can look at it from a, you know, do I think we can build a business that is a horse with a pointy stick on the front of its head? You know, you hope you can. You know, there's something in that ego as a marketeer that kind of wants to do good and do something. And, you know, this is Dan Kirby, who I blew up the business.
Sorry. Oh, yeah.
And Dan was, and I go back quite a long way, and we were talking, and he was talking about the book, The Second Mountain. Mm. And the first mountain is your id and your ego, and it's about car and house and watch and all that stuff and promotion. Second is purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think that bit is where I'm at from a point of view of I want to try and leave a legacy that kind of is more than just fleeting in a way. And maybe that's, you know, I don't mean that, oh, put a big statue of me up, but I mean that sense of when I'm asked what I did, I want to be known, you know, by my kids that I did something that was actually worth the time and effort that I put into something.
Excellent. So final question for, which is what the final question which we ask all of our guests on this podcast is, do you think there is such a thing as a truly sustainable business yet?
I really struggle with the word sustainable. Because I don't actually know what it means, if I'm honest. Like, oh, I'm sustainable. What I breathe, and therefore I've sustained myself. Yeah. So, you know, the argument being, what does that mean that the planet keeps going? Mm. You know, does that, and the planet's going to keep going anyway. So kind of that's sustainable. And I've joked before a lot about be more crocodile. They haven't evolved for about a billion years, and they're okay. They're doing all right. I struggle with that as a term, if I'm honest, because I'm not sure what that actually means in my little head. What I do know and what I really believe is, can you be a responsible business? Mm. And are there truly responsible businesses out there? And I think it's why the journey is a great sort of metaphor or analogy or however you want to look at it for what we're on. Mm. And it was described to me once like fitness, and I think that it's really interesting to think about sustainability, responsibility, like fitness. Mm. So I could, you know, I'm quite fit. I could probably run, I can definitely run a half marathon today, right? Mm-hmm. I could definitely do that. I'd probably run a marathon, but I'm quite fit.
Amazing. That is quite fit.
I will stop tomorrow training. Yeah. And in 6 weeks' time, I won't be able to do it. And therefore I won't be fit. And if we think about sustainability and responsibility and climate in that way, it's a moment in time. I am currently, you know, sustainable. I'm currently net zero. I'm currently carbon neutral. Whatever sort of language or whatever you want to say, it's a moment in time. And if you don't continue that journey like fitness, if you don't continue being smart, it's a bit like muscle memory, you know, mind memory. You don't keep exercising those muscles, they will not continue to be fit. And we will not continue to be, you know, climate neutral or carbon negative, whatever you want to use. And therefore, you might be responsible today, you might be sustainable today, but you go buy a load of diesel, you know, or buy some fighter jets for your team to get around the world, you're not. So I think it's back to the intent. I think it's back to absolutely, if you really, really believe and you really want to get there, you'll get there, but you have to keep going and you have to keep believing and you have to take people with you, because when that next tranche of people come in and they don't care, and the staff churn being 15% in most businesses, you got 15 new people in a 100 size business every year. You may not believe in your mission. And they go, I don't give a flying thing. So that's the way that I look at it. Can we get more responsibility? Can we get everyone to be more responsible? And can we get everyone to lean in to make small changes for big impact?
That is a perfect way to end our conversation today. Thank you so, so much for your time. It's been a pleasure getting to know you a little bit better, and all the very best with Scoot. We'll be watching your journey very closely.
Brilliant. Thank you, Charlie. Have a lovely day.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed my conversation with Strings. You can connect with Scoot Eco at scoot.eco, and that's SKOOT.ECO, Scoot Eco. If you like this episode, it would mean the absolute world to me if you could subscribe or follow this podcast on your favourite podcast app. And I'd be even more grateful for your 5-star review, which helps other people find these conversations. The transcript of this episode can be found at easybeinggreenpodcast.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with me about this episode, or if you have ideas for a future one, you can do that by following at the Easy Being Green Podcast on Instagram. Just slide into my DMs and have a chat with me there. I hope you can join me next week for a really empowering and inspiring conversation with the awesome Sophie Turton from Electric Peach. Sophie will be sharing her hot tips on how to communicate your business's impact. It's a real cracker, so don't miss this one. Until then, stay collected and don't forget to keep it green.